Welcome to season 2 of my podcast, Friends, Relationships, Careers, and MTV. More of the best stuff on earth for you, me, us.
Okay, I have a special guest today. We're communicating across the country via two microphones. It's really a first for me. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Yeah. What are we talking about today?
Glad to be here. My artist statement starts with, well, this is not really an artist. This is my first attempt at an artist statement, but it's also, okay, I guess, right, kind of a bio. And I'm.
Could you explain what kind of art you do? Like, what kind of artist are you? Your statement will tell us.
I don't know what kind of artist I am. I'm just starting out. I mean, I've graduated.
Talk to us about your statement.
So here's my statement. Should I read my statement?
Yes.
It's written in the third person.
And that's, so is my statement. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, yours is too. Oh, that's true. So, born 1978, Fuzhou, China, and then in parentheses, at the end of the revolutionary Mao era and the incorporation of Apple Computer. 1984, upon immigrating to the United States, James became adept at assimilation, appearing to fit in even where he didn't feel like he belonged. Unlike his parents, he was good at mimicking the accents he heard, colloquial pronunciations, donning a kind of linguistic camouflage in order to avoid social pitfalls. This fostered a great deal of internal conflict regarding identity, culture, and politics. It is within this vein of conflict that James seeks to subvert the hierarchies within conventionalized forms of media and content, for example, paintings, photographs, advertising, even sports trading cards and collectibles. He invites the viewer to also engage with the conflict, to take part in the disassembly and reassembly of these cultural artifacts and icons, and also the notions that nest neatly within them. I like to take things apart and see if I can put them back together. I invite the viewer to do the same. James Wong, designed in California, made in China.
My first question, what is an artist statement usually for?
So,
do you put it on your website? Like, do you give it to people? What do you do?
I think an artist statement is a kind of like conversation starter for people who are interested in consuming art by artists, and they want to know, they want to sort of frame or be able to contextualize, or they just want to know about the artist. Like, who is this person making this work? Where do they come from? Like,
so I mean, this goes out on your advertising? Like, where does it go?
This goes, I mean, in the kind of institution of like grad school. So this is within the context of a graduate critique. Interdisciplinary critique class that I'm auditing, that I'm sitting in on. And there's sculptors and there's photographers and there's actually I think it's just sculptors and photographers. But it's sort of like art practice. It's like teaching you how to be what are you going to do when you finish graduate school?
How to become a practical artist?
How to become practicing, so you in other words, you're going to be exhibiting, you're going to be applying for grants, you're going to be applying for residencies, you're going to be applying for basically more things to put on your CV, curriculum vitae, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I don't know.
So that, to let people know what you're doing and what you're working on and what your work is about, and then also at the same time make a kind of formal living at doing it.
So, this is an assignment that is for class. Everyone's going to bring in their artist statement and critique each other's artist statement. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Everyone has to bring in a artist statement, a current one, and these are grad students. So they're working on, sculptures and paint and photographs and projects and things and such. And they're kind of also figuring out what their work is about. And so it's kind of a great,
it's an exercise in defining.
It's an exercise in, defining. I mean, how do you market yourself to your audience, basically? How do you, who are you?
When I read the artist statement, it sounds artisty.
That's
because it should be. Like, it's supposed to sound like that.
Right, yeah. It has a kind of tone to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you, I mean, I guess I'm curious.
You're just asking, like, in basic terms, like, what do I want?
Yeah. Like, if you were doing it without sort of using, the artist sort of words. Like, I mean, you're exploring space between, like...
I think a lot of, like, what I think about a lot is this space between a kind of cultural hybridization, or within that kind of hybridization. I mean, so the things that I want to make work about, or content, I guess, and work that I want to make, that's not work for a commercial value. That's not like whatever, like, you know, graphic design work that I'm doing.
Right.
That it would be in that kind of chord, you know, with that notion of like, we live in a weird time.
I mean, the painting that is actually behind you that I see.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the first example of something you've done that kind of fits with that statement?
Kind of.
Explain what that is, because nobody else can see it.
Well, it was funny because, I mean, it was actually around this time last year, also for a class that I audited. And it was a class called Art and Civic Dialogue. The idea was to sort of kind of the same thing. It's like, as an artist, as someone who's going to practice making art in a public kind of context, how do you engage the public? How do you make kind of publicly conscious, publicly socially aware, civically engaged art? And then these paintings are out of kind of a long string of occurrences of noticing that in every new Chinese restaurant that is opened, that the workers are all from Fuzhou, like what I found out after talking to these, because I mean all over the country, actually, as we were driving out to New York from California, we would stop.
You are of the Fuzhou people. Let's clarify.
This is where I'm from. This is where I was born and lived for the first 6 years of my life, and then this is where, you know, my family, immediate family, and extended family. Eventually, you know, kind of one family at a time, immigrated from directly to the U.S.
Whenever we eat, you do always ask them, are you guys from Fuzhou? And they invariably always are.
Right, yeah.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, well, because the thing is, I hear the accents and I hear, you know, Fuzhou Hua. And there's kind of, it started to get really eerie. And you know? So I didn't know, you know, why that. And so after moving to central New York and settling in a really little, like, some small country town just south of Syracuse, there's, you know, I started going to this Chinese restaurant like a couple miles down the road from us. And, of course, they're also from Fuzhou. And it was a family. It was like a small family. It was just a mother, a father, and a 15-year-old son. So the paintings is kind of, I mean, basically I wanted to bring to the attention of the audience this issue that I came to learn was kind of sort of human trafficking of indentured servants. I mean, basically it's organized kind of criminal activity of smuggling people over from Fujian, really, in these large outer provinces. I mean, there's one province, I think it's Changle province. I read some figure online that out of, like, you know, a million residents in this like small little, you know, like more than half of them had been just pulled in this line of kind of like, it's a kind of franchising of sorts. It's like, and the thing that I, the idea, the concept that I thought about at first, and it had to do with that woman, Jennifer H. Chan, Jennifer mm-hmm. H.
Yep. She wrote the book,
yeah, Fortune Cookie Chronicles.
I think she
brought up the idea of this kind of, like, you know, Chinese restaurant phenomenon, in the U.S. in general. But, and I think that diaspora is talking about the Cantonese and the Hong Kong and the first kind of, like, you know, I think like late 70s kind of diaspora that came. But this one now, and I don't think she's talked much about the Fuzhou, you know, how many people are coming out of Fuzhou in terms of the new smuggling ring. And the ring is called, or the gangs are called Snakeheads, I believe. And the woman, Su Zhen, at this restaurant here, she made an interesting, like, kind of a metaphor. She's like, you know, well, they're the head of the snake, and we just jump on anywhere, and they take us through all the necessary routes. You know, we don't have any.
They get brought here to work.
And they get brought here to work. And you know, usually at, I think it's like the ranges that I've read are, you know, between like, you know, 50 and 100 grand US dollar.
Yeah.
Which they pay off relatively fast. That's the thing, because these people work nonstop. You know, they don't, they never take, their only day off this last year was Thanksgiving, because that's that they knew that.
What do they do after they pay it off? Then they still work in the restaurant, but the money's theirs.
Well, basically they're constantly taking loans also. So they can bring more family members.
Oh.
And so the idea then is to try to, you know, build an operation where you can then hire. So, you know, the ones in Syracuse that are really successful, I've noticed, well, obviously, one, they make great food. You know, they make food that, you know, everyone around eats.
That's why we go. Yeah.
And they've hired people. I mean, they're at the level now where they can take on, you know, a smaller staff.
This is all within the last, what, 10, 20 years we're talking about?
This is, yeah, I would say.
They haven't been here for generations. They've been here for like a year.
Yeah,
like
maybe starting in the 90s or the late 90s. I don't know. I mean, when did all those sort of buffets started popping up in San Diego? All of those buffets are run by, and it's interesting. The buffets are usually run not by families, but by sort of younger teams of younger people. So I think I think buffet is a tougher operation to keep up, but you know, right. You can send a small family and they can do like a little takeout place, like a little restaurant, but they're there nonstop. It's really wild. But anyways, the paintings are to sort of engage maybe in a conversation about this phenomena. And one painting, it's just a close up, sort of very like menu type shot of a the most popular dish actually ordered. From these restaurants, which is a variation of Kung Pao chicken or General Tso's chicken, as they call it here in the East Coast.
It's delicious.
It's great. It's deep fried, breaded chicken dredged in sweet, spicy, savory.
And your painting of it is, it looks delicious.
Sauce. Yeah, it's, yeah. People have said it looks delicious. Yeah.
All of our friends want one because it just looks delicious.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. And then the accompanying piece.
And the accompanying container. So I call this the chicken container number one. And there's the second container, which is container number two. And it's a photograph that I actually found on Google when I was Googling, researching this futso smuggling phenomena. And it was actually. There were these small little JPEG images of, you know, one was of, I think, a casket, you know, coming home. I mean, a lot of these people don't make it
right.
when they come over. I think it's easier now. Like now there's a lot about paperwork. But earlier, in the beginnings, it was like they were literally smuggled as cargo. And so the image that I chose to paint is an image of sort of people sardined in a, in a freight car, like it could, I think it could be a train or shipping freight car.
And the piece is called Takeout. Is that right?
The whole thing is like the Chinese Takeout Project, I guess.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And this was this your sort of first attempt at sort of?
Yeah, this was the first
trying attempt. To tie this together.
Yeah,
tie together what your artist statement was and what this art was.
Yeah, actually, like when I was working on my artist statement this last week, I did think about this in the sort of common line that does, yeah, that fits within this.
And you want your work to go in this direction, obviously.
I'm not sure. I mean,
oh, you're not sure.
Well, I mean, right now these are the things that I'm thinking about.
I guess so. My question with the artist statement is that you're basically, you know, I mean, as a visual artist for the most part, you have to put into words what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and I think that's the tricky part with, like, I mean, that's what I'm noticing in these graduate crits is that most people don't, I mean, there's not an emphasis on writing. And everyone kind of uses this, like, I don't know, the other day there was a little thing online, like it was in, like an artist, an MFA art critique generator. Like you just type in some numbers and it, like, you know, it gives you a whole string of like what's commonly said. And there's so many buzzwords and so many things. Phrase that people use, but nevertheless, though, you do have to get your message across, I think.
they do need to be said like
that. They do need to make sense, and they knew. I mean, if you're sending, I mean, in the context of like sending things out for, you know, applying for grants or for jobs, even. I mean, you know, it's akin to just sending out your resume or your, you know, cover letter of sorts, like what your intentions are, like what your motives are, I guess.
Or what you, I mean, do you feel like it was hard to write an art statement of what you were trying to do?
Yeah, it's a lot like kind of presenting yourself to the world of like, okay, this is, you know, this is like what I believe in, and this is what I want to make work about that, you know, that I would like you to consume, you know?
I mean, have you tried to write an artist statement about another artist that either you admire or that you know? Because I feel like that, when you are writing about your own work, maybe sometimes you can't articulate it or you don't know, but when you look at somebody else's work, sometimes, you know, sometimes then you're like, okay, it's clear that this is what they're trying to do just because you're looking at it from the outside.
Right.
But I mean, I guess, you know, like when you go to museums for somebody like me who's not an artist, you go to museums and they're like thematically sort of pieced together.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who curate, they have to curate based on, you know, some sort of idea of tying things together. And that's what your artist statement is for. You know what I'm saying? They're like,
it's letting them know who, like what you're about. And, sure. I mean, it has a lot to do with curation and where you would want your work to be shown and, you know, what kind of curators you would want to know about what you're doing, I think.
Yeah.
And there's also, I mean, there's all kinds of curators and there's all kinds of museums that show all kinds of, you know, so there, it's not really, I mean, and there's all sort of all different sorts of niches of work. So, I think in the writing world, it's the same. I mean, you kind of build a brand of yourself, really, kind of, you know, and I think
marketing.
It's self-marketing. I don't know, propaganda.
And you've never, I mean, even though you've been an artist for a long time, you've never done this.
Let me
ask you that. Do you even consider yourself, do you consider what you did before you were an artist, or were you more like a craftsman?
I think I was a craftsman. I was learning to like, I mean, and that's, I mean, that, yeah, this is maybe the crux of it, is the defining term, like artist, and what that now means to, in so many spheres of context. I mean, it's used so kind of loosely, I think, you know?
I agree. I think this should be a very specific way to use it.
Right. Or amend it. I mean, like, what kind of artist are you? You know, contemporary, visual, design, industrial, conceptual,
do something theoretical, to say,
philosophical. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people confuse that, like, just because somebody is doing something, that's like artistry. Just because you are painting something or taking photographs, I'm an artist.
Right, right. There's the kind of, but I mean, there's always the audience's initial, like, hey, I that's like, you know, what, like, what is that? Is that sublime? Is that like, or I can do that, or I can't do that, or that's so beautiful, and that's so artistic, and yeah, I mean, it's
artistic, yeah.
Artistic, yeah.
That's been corrupted. I feel like that word has been corrupted. Artistic.
It's hard. Just like the internet.
Yeah. Nothing's corrupted about the internet.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, so now it's like you're trying to say something with your art versus before you just did it, would you say? I mean, that's how I would characterize it. Would you agree with that or not?
Say something. What do you mean say something?
I mean, for example, you know, there's that statement that like all art is political or something.
Oh,
you know?
Uh-huh. I would say that I'm certainly more politicized as a person, and
not even your art is now
what I'm thinking about now.
That.
Yeah, therefore, what I'm thinking about now in terms of art is also would also tend toward the same sort of politicized bent.
Let me ask you. So, you know, some friends have requested this print of yours, this work that you've done, because it's delicious and it looks delicious.
Sure, sure.
But they're taking it without the boxing of the people.
Right.
They're
right.
They want the chicken. They don't want the people in the storage box.
Of course.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I have mixed feelings on that, obviously, but that's I think that's the very sort of nature of what images we want to look at. You know, I mean, of course, everyone wants to look at an image of a delicious, mouth-watering, savory, shiny
chicken
plate of But who wants to think about who made those? You know, okay. Who made that? I mean, so. I mean that's I don't know, that's par for the course, I guess. I think a request was maybe to like include maybe even a small picture of the other painting somewhere, but
right.
Who wants these?
Well, these are like friends, so I understand these are friends. If it was like a museum asking for these pieces and you've had them displayed already, you know, you wouldn't let them display just the watery.
Are these people I know?
No, I mean, for example, me. I would like a photo of this.
Oh, you want this?
But I would ask for both pieces because, you know, to me, I'm like, they're together. But we have friends.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, and plus, one of the little people on your little carton looks like me for some reason.
That's
it's
true.
Very odd.
That's true, yeah.
And I thought you had painted me in as one of these immigrants.
Maybe I did.
Who were smuggled over.
Maybe they're all my friends.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I would just imagine as an artist, like, you know, somebody asking for half of my piece would be, you know, it'd be interesting. Of course, as my friend, like, take whatever you want. You just want a corner of it? Sure, take it. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
But, you know, the idea of the piece is to contrast those two things.
Right, it's really, it's a conversation of sorts between the two images. It's a juxtaposition that's intended. I mean, it's a diptych, as they call it in this...
Oh, it's
a sphere. Yeah, it's a.
That's the two of
just,
the triptych.
It's two paintings. It's just I mean, and this project. I mean, it could go on. I mean, I'd considered, you know, doing more paintings of just, you know, sort of these dichotomies of.
I mean, you could probably make a great career just painting Chinese food.
Just painting food. Yeah,
and people would buy them because they look delicious.
Right.
Great. Thank you.
Enjoy.